Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Plant medicine. We've done a number of shows on plant medicine. It's something I'm personally very invested in. But plant medicine and psychedelic journeys do so many things, including help us to upgrade our beliefs, heal trauma, and cultivate latent powers within us. Drawing on her studies with indigenous elders, including two decades of Iboga initiations with the Bwiti of Gabon, Africa, and training with the Kogi Kagaba of Colombia, today's guest provides a blueprint for responsible and effective use of entheogens to transform pain and trauma into profound connections with ourselves, nature, and the spirit world. Our guest is Tricia Eastman, author of the book Seeding Consciousness, Plant Medicine, Ancestral Wisdom, and Psychedelic Initiation. Tricia is a lineage-honoring medicine woman and founder of nonprofit Ancestral Heart. A renowned speaker, artist, and writer, she bridges worlds rooted in her mestiza ancestry with profound insights from over a decade of Bwiti initiations and training. Well, hello, Tricia, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Hi, Paulo. So honored to be here and so honored to talk with you, just like the work and the contributions that you've made in the space of consciousness are quite significant. And so I think we're going to have an interesting conversation.
Well, thank you. And I want to point out to our listeners that you have a number of interviews on YouTube that I would recommend. They're all just so engaging and so informative. So I'm hoping to add to that by what we're doing today. All right. Well, let's start out about how your book came about, because you describe it as initiation homework that came from direct instructions that you received during a Bwiti initiation in Gabon. And I've heard you quoted as having said to the medicine after that initiation, you told the medicine, "I am in service to you." So please expand on that.
Yeah, I mean, those were two different experiences. One of them was the first time that I met Iboga, which was in an Abigain clinic in Mexico, where I started working back in 2014. And that experience was a profound reunion of separation that was within myself, that was the kind of root of some really horrific eating disorders that I suffered from all, you know, throughout my teens and into my 30s. And finally decided that I wanted to end that pattern for myself and really face my ancestral trauma. And in that was given this great gift of healing. And then, you know, several years later, went to Gabon. This was actually more than several years, 2018, and was in the Mimbara initiation, which is in the Fong lineage of Bwiti. And in that initiation, I was in the temple, and throughout the entire initiation, I was given this set of instructions of what to write about seeding consciousness. How do we translate this elaborate initiatic ritual with this, like, the most powerful psychoactive substance on the planet, the Mount Everest of psychedelics? How do we translate that to modern society in respect to the ancestral lineage that's connected with it, the Bwiti tradition from Gabon, from Equatorial Africa, and the potency of this as a incredible healing tool, and the level of training for which is required to work with such a powerful tool? And how do we bring in the sacredness and the respect for nature into the modern psychedelic movement? And so that's where the formation of Seeding Consciousness. And I would add to that, that there are a lot of, you know, kind of misinterpretations of how we approach psychedelic work or healing work, which is really that we are here to face the pain, to experience things that are uncomfortable. And really, the psychedelics are a tool for resilience to help us build that resilience and, not end suffering.
So let's talk about iboga, because I think probably all of my listeners know about most of the psychedelics. We've done quite a few shows on ayahuasca, psilocybin, etc., and the psychedelic movement, psychedelic conferences, all of this kind of things, which I have attended and I'm very supportive of. And as a matter of fact, with full disclosure, I have done iboga myself a couple times. And it is the Mount Everest is one way of putting it. I mean, I thought ayahuasca was pretty strong, but iboga is unbelievable. So how does, this, do you, you don't have to go to Africa to do iboga. I did it in Costa Rica. But what motivated you? I mean, this is like a 12-hour trip. I don't think you can do iboga. I don't know that much. I don't know all that much about it other than my own experience, but it was a 12-hour experience for sure. Whereas ayahuasca might be 4 or 5 hours. And it was intense. It was the most intense thing I've ever done in my life. But I can't imagine what motivates somebody to go to Africa. I mean, just going to these villages in Africa is hard enough, but that's quite a stretch. So what's the story behind that for you?
I think of Gabon and my Bwiti father, who passed a couple years ago, Atum Rabenga, who's featured in the film The 12, which you can find online, and I think it's on Gaia TV if you want to connect with him. He says that Gabon is the Tibet of Africa. It is
Wow.
the place of spiritual mastery. And so, on the surface, which keep in mind that in this tradition, in this lineage, the national treasure of Gabon is iboga. The most popular tradition in, and knowing that in Africa there's many countries where Muslim traditions are the most popular religion, but Bwiti is the most popular religion of Gabon, or religious tradition technically would be a more appropriate way to say it. And it like has such I think of the movie Black Panther, and they talk about this sacred plant and going through this initiatic ritual. And then they talk about this substance, vibranium, that has this intelligence and this capacity. I feel like they're talking about iboga, that Gabon is a shrouded country that looks humble on the surface because it's all jungle, but these are spiritual masters who live humbly for a reason, because they understand that the human incarnation on this planet is a school. It is an initiation in itself. And the best place to get that initiation, like the deepest, deepest knowledge, is in Gabon. But those who are not ready for it will suffer or be traumatized or may not even survive. And so, once I was ready, once I had that, pull in my soul, I knew it was time. And
I
it
see.
wasn't fun. It was uncomfortable. And you talk about Costa Rica, how, it was very intense for you. In Gabon, you have no comforts, you have no toilets, you have like, I don't speak French, so that adds another layer of difficulty. It's a French-speaking country, and then you're given very high quantities of the medicine. So it's like, in Daniel Pinchbeck's book, Breaking Open the Head, he talks about this understanding that, they pretty much in the villages, in initiation, will stuff you full of medicine until you can't take anymore. So like in this.
Do you recommend that? I mean, do you, what kind of, okay, so you are a master of psychedelics. There's so many things we could talk about. I mean, you've experienced everything, in your book, it's very clear, Seeding Consciousness. And I want to get to the concepts of the book pretty soon. But, do you think people should do iboga? And if they do iboga, should they go to Costa Rica as opposed to going directly to Gabon? I mean, Costa Rica, it's legal. That's the reason that's a good place to go. But do you think iboga is a good thing for people to cut their teeth on? Or what are the qualifications? As a psychedelic counselor, how do you know who to recommend it to or not?
I mean, it's a tough question because, I mean, on one side of the coin, I feel like we're all so traumatized and it really cuts through the brain. And I wish I could share some of the new studies that have come out recently, but I know we're limited on time. I'll share one that was done at Stanford with Nolan Williams. And they found that these veterans who received one treatment of Ibogaine in Mexico, just one treatment, had an average of 1.3 years in regeneration to their brain. So their brain went back. It turn back the clock 1.3 years. So the neuroregenerative properties are profound. And for these people, like veterans that are suffering from just horrific trauma and have been
Or
suffering for
heroin
so long,
addicts.
or heroin addicts, I think it's very case specific because there's a specific type of person. Like if you've been in the military and you've gone through boot camp, you're going to do a lot better on Ibogaine than someone who's never done any psychedelics before. You know, it's a very hard experience. So I feel like there's different scales to look at. And then sometimes with people with addictions, they've had some very extreme experiences, and some of them do really well with it and some of them don't. But the outcomes for opiate use disorder, for the interruption of it, are quite significant, 33% success rate
Right.
versus treatment, which is like less than 3% for
Right.
traditional
That's where I heard
treatments.
about it was the success they were having with it, relatively speaking, in British Columbia, as a treatment for heroin addiction, or as a disruptor of that. So that's how I heard about it. Well, what is the concept? The title of your book is Seeding Consciousness. What is the concept behind that, and how does that relate to personal transformation as well as collective societal change?
So, I mean, when we look at this understanding of the title, I didn't receive the name of the title when I was actually in Gabon. I received it afterwards. Alex Gray, who's someone I've spent some time with and was so kind to write the foreword of the book, he made a post about this idea of how art plants a seed in the mind stream, that there's like sacred art, such as the term is called sponge grawl. And it's like these deified statues, like in the Tibetan traditions, in the temples, that literally transmit consciousness through their eyes. And if you look at Alex Gray's work, I feel like his work in itself is, you know, that same type of transmission. There's a bridging between worlds. And so the idea of seeding consciousness, I believe, is this process first of clearing the subconscious mind, going through planting these seeds which already exist within us. We're not planting something that's not already there. It's not like, you know, and even the name seeding is a bit deceptive in that respect. But the end product, what I really get to, the end goal is that we're not here on this planet to heal. We're here to be creators. We're here to master whatever our life's mission or purpose is. And so the idea of seeding consciousness is to become that transmission through the work that we do, through, you know, a process I talk about a lot in the book is inner alchemy, and how we really look at the shadow and tapping into these intuitive capacities, or using psychedelics to tap in and receive insight and information that we wouldn't normally have access to move that energy.
You know, seeding consciousness—it's sort of another way I think that would probably be an accurate description of what you're describing in the book would be stimulating archetypes. I mean, we have all of the archetypes within us to begin with, and so Yeah, and you do write a lot about the archetypes, particularly the astrological system of archetypes, and it all comes back to the concept of the soul. You talk about the process of soul retrieval. So what is the soul? As somebody who's been the host of this show for 40 years, I've had interviews with, chocolate for a woman's soul, and this soul this and soul that. How would you describe the soul? Because in Iboga, there's this soul retrieval, there's learning your soul name. Please speak to this.
So in Bwiti, the concept of the Big Bang is very embedded into the cosmos. And so when we think about the Big Bang, that is the beginning of the splitting of consciousness. And why would consciousness choose to split itself apart so that it could experience and so that it could learn and develop? And so the idea of soul retrieval is that we're retrieving ourselves all the way back to the Big Bang, the whole history, which is all of the archetypes, retrieving all of those, like the tarot or the 64 I Ching, or we talked about we've talked about both our interest in human design and gene keys, retrieving those archetypal parts of ourselves back into the whole. And it's through each part that we understand and we embody and we retrieve that we gain power. And I would say our soul, yes, it is a piece of that blast from, these big bangs that have created the cosmos and these other cosmic events that have created the cosmos that we live in. But we also have layers within that soul. So it's like when our consciousness redeems itself at these different layers. For example, when you think about like my view of the human from the standpoint of the seven chakras or our solar system, that is our complete redemption of a level of soul. Once we, get past that level, we go past our own cosmos when we start going into these other planetary archetypes like Sirius and, all these other planets. And these are different levels of intelligence that we are essentially learning to master and redeem within ourselves. And I do believe that humans can embody higher elements of self, although I will say that living in this particular realm makes it more difficult to get past those higher levels.
Right. You described Gabon, or somebody described Gabon as the Tibet of Africa. Well, the Tibetans, I love Buddhism, and we've had a lot of shows on this. They believe in reincarnation. Is that part of the Bwiti concept of the soul?
Absolutely. Yeah, with Bwiti, the idea is that, we reincarnate over and over again. We come here to learn. We go through these different cycles, and it's very common when you're in the journey. I don't know if you experience this yourself, but as you get into different layers of initiation, you more is revealed. So it's like this mystery school of understanding our cosmic origins, and it's kind of going through the cycle of us starting out as these, nothingness in the void, and the Big Bang, and then like bacteria forming and rocks, and the first human life, like animals, and going through these different phases of human development, such as the times of Lemuria, which was called Mu, and that's what Atum Rebinga, my Bwiti father, refers to that period as Mu. But most people know it as Lemuria and Atlantis. And I feel like each level we're, essentially, learning these aspects of, that creation story. And each time you're going back in, you're getting more of that.
So where does the ego factor into all of this? Because you talk about the egoic template, and we think about the human ego, and it's demonized a lot in many spiritual circles. But it seems to me it's like at a higher level of consciousness than the animal, most animals. Where do you think the ego fits in terms of like evolution, in terms of the evolution of spiritual consciousness?
I think that the ego is a very complex thing and it serves many different purposes. But for the sake of explaining in this context, I would say that the ego is actually the part of ourselves that is separated and feels that sense of separation, which is an illusion. I mean, we're learning now with things like, I don't know if you followed the telepathy tapes with these
Oh.
children that have been studied, in different psionic studies that have telepathic powers that are essentially, by our society deemed autistic and handicapped. But we're seeing that. Humans are not actually separate, and consciousness as a field is not separate. So it's like we've created this kind of box that allows us to have senses and emotions and what we think is an independent experience, but in all reality, we're not separate. And so the idea of, the journey of the soul is, first we're born. And we're exactly perfect in every way. And then between age 0 and 7, we develop this egoic template. And that egoic template, which is our subconscious mind, we spend the rest of our life, unless we discover psychedelics or spiritual practices,
Right.
unwinding that. And that's really like the process of learning within the soul.
And I've heard it described and I've experienced it myself. Psychedelics, the ego kind of dissolves during the psychedelic experience, especially if you take a heroic dose of whatever, psilocybin or LSD or ayahuasca. And then you quote Mahatma Gandhi who says, when the ego dies, the soul awakens. And I think the way that you have chapter 5 entitled Learning How to Die and Seeding Consciousness Through Ego Death, as if taking psychedelics is kind of like a practice for the final transition of this incarnation, which is death itself. Is that the way that you see it? I kind of think that maybe death is going to be a little easier for me because I have so much experience in letting go of the ego. Is that the way that you see it?
Yeah, I mean, I love that chapter because, I really think that birth and death and psychedelics are one and the same. It's all like this kind of same process of crossing through the bardo, so they say in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, or as a child, you're going through the birth canal, you feel that sense of pressure, which you also feel in the psychedelic experience when you first take psilocybin mushrooms or iboga or ayahuasca. Many times you feel tension or you feel discomfort or you might purge, and then things open up. And really, it's this kind of shift in the neural connections happening in the brain. There's very specific neuromodulations that happen with different psychedelics. But the way I see it is the ego is almost like these blinders to the veil, so that you think what you're living in is this, reality, which is, the earth reality that we live in now. And then all of a sudden the blinders come off and you can see many other different realities that also exist.
Well, you have a nonprofit called Ancestral Heart, and we didn't even get into your connection with the Kogi Kagawa. It's so much. There's so much value in your book, and this show is so short. But what is the real? And then you have the Hugh Institute. Is that the right pronunciation? Hugh,
Yeah, Hugh.
HU. Yeah, okay. Which is going to be opening this retreat center in the Azores. So please share any information you'd like to about those aspects of your work. You do so much. It's incredible. I'm so happy that you're with us. But we've only got a couple minutes, so tell us about
Yes.
what you're doing and how people can get involved.
Thank you. Well, Ancestral Heart really has been, something that's important to my soul. I believe that when we're doing this work, a big piece of it is giving back, especially to the indigenous wisdom keepers that have stewarded these traditions for millennia. So Ancestral Heart is really focused on biocultural stewardship. We do a ton of work with the Kogi Kagaba in Colombia. We're doing a very important project that really is about redeeming the soul of the mother in respect to specific pieces of land that are sacred sites that are important and significant to the Kogi, for instance. And we're also doing stewardship work with Iboga in Gabon, so planting Iboga and community work around that. And then also my other project, the Hugh Institute, is a center that we're building in São Miguel in Azores. And again, these things, I don't choose them, they choose me. I was literally right before the pandemic given a really strong message that this center needed to be built. And I asked where, and it said, in the Azores. I'd never even heard of the Azores. This is in 2019. I look it up on a map and I said, what's the name of it? And it said Hugh. And I looked up the word Hugh because I was like, that's, am I like making that up in my head? That's really weird. And it's like the Kemetic word of the tongue of Thoth, which is the sound that wisdom makes when it enters the initiate.
I want people to go to your website and look up all of this stuff. I'm afraid we've run out of time. And what you just said reminded me of an old expression that I love, which is, "Wherever God drags me, I will follow." And so that's kind of the story of your life and mine too. And so thank you so much for being who you are. There's so many more things we could have talked about that are in your book, Seeding Consciousness, but we've run out of time, and I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, ancestralheart.com. It's all one word, ancestralheart.com. So thanks again, Tricia, for being with us.
Thank you.
And for those who may have tuned in to Pathways late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien. Now, don't worry, you can play and/or share this interview whenever you want, via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Tricia Eastman, author of Seeding Consciousness, Plant Medicine, Ancestral Wisdom, and Psychedelic Initiation. I want to say a heartfelt thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo.fm on Sunday mornings at 8:30 a.m. USA Pacific Time. And you can also listen to the podcast version of today's show for free at divination.com. That's spelled D-I-V-I nation.com, as well as Paulo's YouTube channel and other free podcast servers. Feel free to forward a link to this show to others. So this is Paulo bidding you adieu and reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Podcasts. And thanks again to Tricia Eastman and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.